Some segments of this week's episode are not included in this podcast due to rights restrictions. But never fear, the episode can be streamed in its entirety for free at fromthetop.org. The great soprano Dawn Upshaw, the Pulitzer Prize-winning composer John Corigliano, the fiery violin virtuoso Nadia Salerno-Sonnenberg, all of them share the stage with the lucky young musicians on today's show. From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the energy of America's kids and the power of classical music. This week, it's our all-guest artist highlights program featuring some of our favorite moments when renowned professional musicians have come on the show to perform with our kids. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. And now, sitting across from me in the studio is From the Top's own renowned artist, Christopher O'Reilly.
Okay, guest artists. That's our theme for today's Best Of show. Isn't that right, Joanne?
That's what we're here to do.
Next up on this all-guest artist highlights show is soprano Dawn Upshaw. Now, Dawn is interesting because she herself told us she would never have been a From the Top kid when she was a teenager.
I love that.
In fact, the way she talked about her teenage years, apparently she was never a big standout performer, never the kid who was the center of attention.
Your parents raised you on show tunes, though, and folk songs, not originally on classical music.
No, I didn't really hear much classical music until I was in college and studying voice really seriously.
So, you know, what sorts of things at home were you listening to when you were a kid?
I was listening to Bob Dylan and Joni Mitchell.
Oh, great. Yeah.
And my parents were very active in the civil rights movement, and so I really grew up on folk music, and we even went as a family and sang for school kids and kind of to get this message across.
You were born, what, outside Chicago? Somewhere in Illinois, right?
I was actually born in Nashville, Tennessee, but I grew up outside of Chicago.
Oh, great. Yeah. Me too. And Joni Mitchell, that's great. I love that. So what were you like as a teenager? Were you outgoing? Were you singing all the time? Or were you just kind of keeping to yourself? Or
I was not all that outgoing. It's a kind of hard business, actually, especially for singers if you're not really ambitious. But I loved music. I always found that music was soothing to me. Whatever was going on in my life, I would often go back to my bedroom when I got home from school and just listen to music, you know, for a couple hours.
And so were you singing in junior high and high school?
I was singing in choirs, and I was studying a little bit of piano.
Neat. And so when did classical music start getting into the mix a little bit?
Well, as I was in high school, I became very interested in Broadway music, and I think that was kind of my goal going off to college. I wanted to learn to sing well enough and to do some acting to get onto Broadway when I finished. But as part of my study in college, I had to take a lot of history courses, all of a sudden, this whole new world of music opened up to me. I was hearing music by Schubert and Bach and things that I hadn't really listened carefully to. Yeah. And I really decided to go in a different direction.
Yeah, I mean, Bach wrote more vocal music than Stephen Sondheim, for instance.
Yes,
I mean,
it's
sort of hard to imagine. But I mean, we think of you sort of on this track, and of course you were very serious about music going into college, wanting to pursue music. But, you know, it's not all fun and games. I mean, apparently, you know, your voice teacher in college was very encouraging, but not initially, you know, that impressed?
Well, I think that my love for music is what kept me going because, in junior high, I auditioned for all of the shows and I never got a part. You know, I was never one of the top singers in junior high or in high school. And even when I got to college, my teacher had to give me a little report on his first listening. Actually, he wasn't supposed to tell me what he wrote, but I found out later that there was a system 0 through 5, and 5 being outstanding. And I guess 0, no talent at all, I don't know. But I got a 3, and his note, his handwritten note, was nice but nothing special.
Gosh.
So
there you go. Well, and an aside here, I mean, you sort of got this inside information because the son of your voice teacher in college is now your husband.
That's right.
Now you've got two kids of your own. That's your father-in-law changed his tune? I imagine he's mightily impressed with you now.
He's come around. He actually sat me down in the last couple years of college and said, I think maybe you can do this, gal. He always calls me gal. So he was eventually very encouraging. Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's a very encouraging sort of story because, you know, as I say, we imagine, you know, here you are at the top of your, you know, career and at the top of the business, quite frankly, in my opinion. And so I just imagined you in high school getting all the parts and in college just being, you know, having the red carpet. And that's great. So basically, if you want to do it, you do it. And
I think if you want it badly enough, you work at it.
Well, let's hear you sing something. That's why our audience of high school kids paid the big bucks to see you here. Now, in fact, Megan and I are going to accompany you. I understand this is the first song you ever performed in public?
I think so. You know, my memory's not great. That was kind of a long time ago. But when I was 15, the first song I sang for my high school buddies by myself was this song. It's called A Simple Song. It's by Leonard Bernstein and comes from a much larger piece of his called Mass.
Okay. Megan, get out your flute again, and all three of us will do this.
Blessed is the Lord.
That was soprano Dawn Upshaw singing A Simple Song by Leonard Bernstein. She was accompanied by yours truly and by the 14-year-old flutist who was on that episode with us, Megan Amy from Haddonfield, Connecticut. Now, Dawn is about as non-diva as a soprano can get.
True.
In fact, there was a young singer on the program with us, Kevin Ray, and when Dawn heard that he secretly didn't like one of her more avant-garde opera performances, she laughed quite a bit about it and actually found it so interesting she asked us to have him talk about it on the air.
A couple summers ago, I was at the Boston University Tanglewood Institute, which is a high school program for, you know, gifted young musicians, and we got free tickets to all the concerts at the Tanglewood Music Center, yeah. And she did a recital, a great recital of songs by Wolf and Fauré and Messiaen and a Bach cantata.
So how was it?
It was all really great singing, mm-hmm. But there was this Bach cantata was actually staged, mm-hmm. which I just didn't.
Who did the staging?
It was Peter Sellers, uh-huh. staging, and it just. I didn't understand it that much.
Yeah, it sounds like a little bit of reservation there.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Peter Sellers has staged Bach cantatas many times, and I really wanted to do this one. Mein Herz schwimmt in Blut, and that means my heart swims in blood. And this is a very, very dramatic and rather upsetting cantata, and I thought that actually adding some staging to it would be a wonderful idea. So Peter had me in a costume with a wonderful scarf that kind of became a prop. I was often on the floor. I was singing on my back. I was singing on my belly. My arms were flinging about. And then at the end, when there's great joy, I dance. So what didn't you like about it, Kevin?
Well, I seem to remember there was something about you were supposed to be depicting Renaissance and Baroque paintings, and they had you lying on the floor with the scarf, and I think it was something that was beyond my understanding. I think it just kind of flew over my head, you know what I mean?
Didn't you feel like it opened a whole new room, like, you know, that you'd never been in that room before? It was a whole new idea. It's taking Bach out of the museum, you know, and putting it into real life with real emotions, mm-hmm. real feelings.
No, I didn't get it.
Well, I think that's okay. You might be a little slow, and you just need to come. You'll come again. And you need to see this again because it's a language, it's a visual language maybe. It's a dramatic language that you're just not accustomed to pairing with Bach.
Maybe you're right. Maybe I need to have a little bit more of an open mind.
I think you do need to have an open mind. What a beautiful thought.
Well, if there were ever playful discord between Dawn and Kevin in their conversation, there was total harmony in their music together. Here is soprano Dawn Upshaw and 17-year-old baritone Kevin Ray performing Benjamin Britten's arrangement of the traditional song, O Wally Wally.
The water is wide, I cannot get more, and neither have I wings to fly.
Give me a boat that will carry two.
So did my fall.
That was soprano Dawn Upshaw singing Britten's Oh Wally Wally with the 17-year-old baritone Kevin Ray. Kevin is from the town of Cornwall, New York. And the venerable cello master Janos Starker is the next from-the-top guest artist we'll revisit. At the age of 88, Maestro Starker is one of the last great maestros of his generation still with us. And as you'll hear right now, he's more than just still with us. The guy's sharp as a tack, both musically and with his legendary sardonic sense of humor.
May I call you Janos or Maestro, or what would you like?
I've been called worse names.
Well, we celebrate very young musicians on this program, and you started at what age playing the cello?
Six.
Six, that's quite young. And when
I was put on stage about 4 months later.
Oh, dear. So they just thrust you out on stage and said, here's what you're going to do?
And week after week, I always got worse and worse. And then we declared that the teacher must be bad.
Blame the referees, blame the teachers. You know, it's always good. You went from childhood to the Franz Liszt Academy and your schooling.
Well, I was already at the age seven student at the academy. Mm-hmm. And well, the rest is sort of history.
Yeah. Now, as a teacher, you mostly teach conservatory-age students, college students, but you sometimes have, or many times have, younger students?
Well, there are some, but I personally am not particularly interested in teaching child prodigies because my job is to prepare young musicians, old musicians, to become professionals.
Yeah.
And by the way, this young lady who is going to play for us, I can't claim that she's my student alone because she was studying already in the program with Susan Moses, who's a faculty member, and she also plays for the other teachers.
Well, you're also very modest. I remember I met you at La Jolla Festival a couple of years ago where they were honoring you, but the greatest honor was, of course, seeing all kinds of professional cellists. I mean, some really great names. You know, Gary Hoffman was there and a bunch of others. And they're all on stage.
Well, somebody just asked the question that whether I can count the number of students. I taught at Indiana. It's getting close to 600, I suppose. I see them all over the world.
Well, you've affected the cello world in a great, great, great legacy that you have. So tell us, who are we going to hear, one of your students?
It's Anna Kim, who is, I think, 16 by now.
Yeah. And she's here in Bloomington, and she's here on stage. Come on in, Anna. So, Janos, you must be very proud of your student, Anna, here.
Yeah, sort of, yes.
Anna, were you nervous playing for Mr. Starker?
Yes.
Yeah?
Very.
Is it always that way? I mean, well, you know him pretty well now, but what was it like when starting with him?
Well, at first, I was really scared because I heard a lot of stories about Mr. Starker.
Stories?
Yeah.
Stories.
I heard that he made a lot of girls cry.
Well, but that had nothing to do with his teaching. That has to do with his romantic life.
But after a couple lessons, I got to know him, and he's very warm-hearted and very nice.
True enough. Janos, as you were saying, it's unusual for you to take on a 16-year-old student. What made you take Anna on?
Well, there are two things I'm looking for. One is talent, obviously. The other one is brain. And she has lots of it. So that gives her a great chance to succeed in this field.
So that's what you start with in a student. But as a teacher, what is your goal? Where do you have a life plan in line for Anna, or do you have a hope for her, or how do you feel as a teacher? Well,
I think you've heard it during this program already, when the kids of Mimi Zweig described what she's doing. We are giving the tools, instrumental and musical tools, and eventually that allows them to make choices and whatever nature, God, mother, father gave them will allow them to become functional, hopefully professional musicians, and eventually some of them outstanding artists.
Well, it's a great philosophy to have, but I can imagine there must be many students who come to you who just want to play like you. I mean, like Janos Starker, and I think that would be a pretty laudable goal.
Well, I think that the proof of that I may have succeeded, that I have outstanding, very successful cellists all over the five continents running around, concertizing, playing in orchestras, in chamber music ensembles, and teaching, and none of them sound like me.
You've done very, very well. Anna, do you have a question for Mr. Starker?
Oh, Mr. Starker, you've taught many years, and for many years, and over 40 years, have...
Make it 65.
How has cello playing changed over those years, those many years?
It got better. As I often say, that we are living now in the era of the golden age of cello playing. There are thousands of outstandingly gifted and highly prepared cellists all over the world, and today you really have to be good to succeed.
Yeah, true enough, true enough. Well, you have a passion for teaching your students to serve the music. I mean, it's not just playing the notes wonderfully, but seeing a piece of music as something to be respected.
At 12:30, I always have the passion. Around 3:30, 4 o'clock, it fades away.
But it's not about idiosyncrasy. I mean,
The fact is that when I was very young, I discovered that primarily my nature, by temperament, in some sense, I'm more a teacher than a performer, notwithstanding with the thousands and thousands of performances I made in the recordings. But by temperament, I'm a teacher. So therefore, my job is, because I stayed alive through all kinds of hazards called Second World War and so on, that my job is to make sure that I contribute to the cause that I chose in mind, which was music and cello.
Well, I must say, your performances of the Brahms sonatas are among my favorites, and that's not to say just one recording. You made one recently, and then the original one I heard, I think, was...
If you live that long as I, practically all the literature I recorded 3 times, 4 times, yeah. 5 times.
And they're all great.
And now I'm reaching the age, of course, the famous story that when I was 6 and 7 on stage, I was very good for my age. Now I'm getting to be the same stage on the other end. It's not original. I think it was Misha Elman who said that.
Anna, you're starting college and finishing high school at the same time. Is this true?
Yes.
So is it true that you see your mom in the halls of Indiana University and you're just kind of running into each other?
Yeah, she's...
She comes to her lesson to finally see her.
Oh, yeah, occasionally, yes.
She checks up on me a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, now we have the honor of hearing you play with your teacher. Tell everybody what you two are going to play.
We're going to play Boccherini's Sonata for Two Cellos in C major.
Okay.
Just the first movement.
Yes.
Just the first movement. Before you play, Anna, thank you so much for your great cello playing. And Janos Starker, we so much appreciate your being with us today. Thank you for being with us. We'll look forward to this Boccherini.
We've had the pleasure of featuring so many celebrated artists on our show, and it's always extra inspiring to watch them collaborate with our young performers. Go to our website this week to see a photo gallery of guest artists through the years. That's at fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from U.S. Trust, believing that the arts have a worth all their own in stimulating the hearts and imaginations of our country's best young musicians. From the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, recognizing exceptionally creative individuals. This year's MacArthur Fellows are at macfound.org. And from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the energy of America's kids and the power of classical music. This week, it's our All Guest Artists Highlights program featuring moments when the young musicians on our show have performed with some of the greatest professional artists in classical music. Coming up, the phenomenal violinist Nadia Salerno-Sonnenberg joins Christopher O'Reilly and three teenage string players to perform the Scherzo from Schumann's Piano Quintet. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. It's all yours, Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Nadia Salerno-Sonnenberg was one of the most fun guest artists we've ever had on the show. You would agree, wouldn't you, Joanne?
I would agree. She was great.
Definitely one of the great violinists of our time, a very young winner of the Naumburg International Violin Competition and the Avery Fisher Prize,
And with over 20 releases on the EMI and Nonesuch labels, Nadia has performed with pretty much every major orchestra in the world. These days, Nadia is the highly adventurous artistic director of the New Century Chamber Orchestra in San Francisco. She brought her trademark passion, sense of humor, and no-nonsense candor to our program.
Okay, so Nadia, let's spend a little bit more on this great story of your early years. And by the way, I should tell everybody that your mom is in the audience today, so you've got to tell the truth. Okay, we've got
no,
the fact checker.
No, I don't. My mom will cover for me.
That's right, she'll cover for you. Okay, so you were born in Rome.
Yes.
Moved to Philadelphia when you were 8 with your mom, brother, and grandparents to study at Curtis,
right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
But like a lot of our kids, you felt like a little bit of an outcast. What's the story about the show and tell at your first American school?
Oh, God, yeah. Well, you know, I came from Italy, from Rome, Italy. We actually moved to Cherry Hill, New Jersey. There's a little bit of a culture shock.
Yeah, a little bit.
And I had, I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait to get to the States. I was so excited about it and went to elementary school in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And, you know, I was being raised, and I am now so thankful for this, very Italian. So I stood out, you know, just because I was so Italian in a non-Italian place. And plus also I played this geeky violin, which I had to really, I really suffered for that for many years. And this one time, you know, show and tell. Do they still do show and tell in school?
Mm-hmm.
No?
Sometimes,
well, we
yeah.
had show and tell. And the teacher said, bring in your favorite thing next week and talk to the class, all this kind of stuff. So everybody brought in their favorite thing. And mostly there were a couple of toys, maybe a new doll, that sort of thing. Mostly they brought in records. And at that time it was Bobby Sherman and Donny Osmond.
Wow.
David Cassidy kind of stuff.
Dark days of music.
I like those guys. But right. I brought in the Brahms Violin Concerto. I wasn't a nerd. I had crushes on all those guys, but I really, that's the piece I was into big time. And this was my favorite album. I listened to it over and over back in the LP days until it's completely scratched up. And yeah. I brought that in. And I said, this is my favorite thing. And I put it on. And they started to laugh like out of a nightmare kind of laughing, just including the teacher, which I thought was... And that's sometimes what a young person who loves classical music has to go through.
Sometimes, yeah.
It's very normal. It's happened to all of us.
Yeah.
And you have to fight for the respect. And then, you know, once they had little student concerts there at the school and they heard me play, they thought I was the coolest thing. I was pretty good in gym. I was very good in gym. And I played the violin really well. So I fought for my place, but I was ostracized.
Wow.
Because I liked the Brahms. You know?
I imagine things got better at the Curtis Institute, where you're among musicians.
Yeah, they didn't. There I brought in the Bobby Sherman record.
That's right. And played better shortstop than anybody at the school.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
And at home, I have strong relationships with your family, special bonds with, your grandfather and your grandma?
My grandparents, absolutely. I learned pretty much everything I know about life from my grandmother, and I'm very grateful to that. But I would have to say my grandfather was probably the hugest influence in my musical life, because he introduced me to opera.
Wow.
And that it's been the voice, how the voice works, the drama of opera, the totality of it, has been such a huge influence on me since I was very, very, very small. He introduced it to me. We would listen to Live from the Met every Saturday, mm-hmm. and plus tons of records that we would listen to together. He would explain every single thing that was going on, and he would explain the difference of the qualities of the voices. He liked the Italian tenors a lot.
Sure, yeah. I would imagine. So what about some of his favorite recordings, like one of them in particular?
One thing that I remember very vividly, I was asking him about how it works. Is it different for tenors than it is for sopranos and things like that? And he said, I want to play you an example of something. And he played me Anna Moffo singing Rachmaninoff's Vocalise, which at that time, first place, I hadn't even heard that song before. So I was just, oh, it's incredible. It's gorgeous. So gorgeous. But when we got to the end of the tune, he said to me, now listen very, very, very carefully. She sings the entire last phrase without taking a breath. And even at a very, I'm maybe 10 years old, I was blown away. I couldn't believe it was possible by a human being. And yet, it's the most stunning moment in music. For me, it hit me very strongly.
Thank you.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Chills, just amazing. I mean, you know, there's the high note, and then it goes
it
on.
Just keeps
it, goes,
going.
It keeps going. It keeps going. It's just, it's unreal.
It really is.
It's just, well, we could play that together.
We could. It'd be a hard act to follow, but we could try.
Let's do it. Okay. Rachmaninoff Focalise.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at fromthetop.org. Over the last 5 years, From the Top and the Jack Hancock Foundation have awarded well over $1 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more.
So we just heard the superb violinist Nadia Salerno-Sonnenberg performing Rachmaninoff's Vocalise. Incredibly inspiring, especially for me since I was the lucky man at the piano, but more importantly, she was inspiring to the young musicians on that program. She joined three of them with me again at the piano to give a phenomenally high-energy performance of the scherzo from Robert Schumann's Piano Quintet.
we're going to have that performance take us out of the program today. The young musicians joining me and Nadia are Zachary Taxon, 16-year-old violinist from New York City, Isha Wayman, 17-year-old violist from Newton, Massachusetts, and Jessica Wang, 18-year-old cellist from Bedminster, New Jersey. We hope you enjoyed today's special collection of From the Top guest artist highlights, and I want to thank you for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly.
And I'm Joanne Robinson.
Please join us next week when we take it from the top. And now, Nadia Salerno-Sonnenberg and our young musicians perform the Scherzo movement from Robert Schumann's Piano Quintet. Thank you.
This special highlights version of From the Top is written and produced by Tim Banker with music producer Tom Vinieri. The tour producer is David Balsam and the production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette with David Forbes and John Servies. Post-production by Tom Vagley. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. Our founding partners are New England Conservatory and WGBH Boston. To download an application to appear on our program, visit fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. From the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at GatesFoundation.org. This is NPR.
If you enjoyed this week's podcast, please consider making a gift to keep us broadcasting loud and clear. Go to fromthetop.org/support.